Welcome to my talk about reproducible builds on Android. I will show you today, let me first introduce myself. My name is Andreas Itzhak-Rehberg, going by the nick Izzy. I started Izzy on Droid in 2015. We are meanwhile a team for a couple of years. We provide APKs built and signed by the corresponding developers. After performing some additional checks, like checking if they are clean, virus total, what's inside, libraries, and so on. And for 2 years now, we also provide reproducible builds. Meanwhile, covering about two-thirds of the apps in our repository. To be more precise, it's currently 62.4% of our apps which are covered by reproducible builds. And I will today introduce you to our reproducible builds and how they are set up, and also compare with how FDroid is doing it. I'm a former FDroid maintainer as well. And specific questions go to the end, as usual. If there are some understanding questions, so you lose context, I hope it's okay if you can ask them in between. And should I talk too fast, please give me a signal. I'm known to talk too fast. I tried my best to keep down. Okay. Today, first the overview. The slide is also available at, what is it called? Pretox. And it's also available, you have a QR code and a few QR codes at the end to scan for the slides. So first item we want to have is what are reproducible builds and what are they good for? Then how do we approach reproducible builds on Izzy on Droid, and what's the difference for FDroid? What are the main challenges? I can't put them up all, it would take too long. We would need two sessions at least. What are the most frequent reasons of failed reproducible builds, and some of them also we can fix, how we can fix them. What should Android app developers be aware for, of, and take care for to give the best chances for their apps to be reproducible? And then we have the question and answers. Okay, first, what are reproducible builds? What does it mean to have a build reproducible? You as a developer build an APK, sign it, and provide it for install. You have the source available. We try take your source, try to build the APK, and if we come up with a byte identical copy, that means we reproduced your APK, we can tell everybody, hey, this one is honest. They really built this APK from their source code. So that is basically what means a reproducible build. Third parties make sure independently that your software hasn't been altered. Such increasing safety, reliability, and trust, because people who trust you or think maybe they can trust you see, oh, somebody else reproduced it, so it's really fine. That's a part of it, to make sure that developers' code always works the same way. That is the best case. Some builds are, that might sound funny, but it is a way, they're non-deterministic, but reproducible. How can that be? We build in a loop until we find the right one. There are some some errors in the build frameworks that cause different order of bytecode, which causing a reproducible build to fail. If you try often enough, one time lucky, you find the right one. So we can prove, okay, the code is working the same way if you don't need the loop. But it makes the software also more consistent because you know it works the same way. And again, the trust case. If it doesn't sum up and you got some completely different one, you run a different scope on it and you see, well, an entire block of code that is not present in the reproducible build. You know, maybe somebody was tweaking into your code, putting something in and poisons the supply chain or whatever, or you didn't pin the dependencies properly, there's a difference. So you see, it shows up things where there are improvements you might want to add to your process. A side effect of this is, if you have it really matched, now comes the business case and says, we need to make sure we comply with all licenses. We can, because we know what is inside, it is proven what is inside, everything that's inside is mapped, and we can say it falls under this and this license. If we meet that, everything is fine. Nothing was struck in by some dependency of a dependency of a dependency that violates some of the licenses. Everything is fine. Yeah? Binary is matched, so the source code obviously has to match. I already said that before, protect your software against being compromised. That is what we had as a third point already. If the results are identical, it's protecting your software against being compromised because nobody has put something in the middle or taken away. They increase confidence and trust. I said that already, but there's one more point to it. I hope that is in here. Yep. It also can be used to confirm ownership in case of signing kilos because we have the records. We have the records from the previous builds that says this commit we have built from. This commit is still in your Git repository and you didn't overwrite the history, so we can match that. There's an email address to the commit and we can say yes, okay, that matches, and we can confirm your key was lost. You didn't just have somebody introduce his own stuff into yours and overtake your repository, but it was really you. I take it that way. Okay, so that's an overview about what reproducible builds are and what are they good for. There are many more use cases. These are just the core ones. So how do we approach reproducible builds at ISE on Droid and on F-Droid? At ISE on Droid, reproducible builds run on a complete separate track. We ship the original APKs built and signed by the developers, and on a second machine, we run the reproducible build. In the clients, come over to UD202 to understand, we can present it to you. The clients show a green shield to say, yes, confirmed. It might be delayed, it come later, because it runs on a separate track. At F-Droid, it is integrated with the build system. F-Droid ships their own builds, and if they are reproducible and marked as reproducible, they ship the APK of the developer, but only after the build process. So the build process takes a bit longer. That is, if a build fails to be reproducible, the APK at F-Droid won't be shipped. So you get extra security. It could potentially be a problem, so we hold it back. At ISE on Droid, you get the APK, but you see the green shield is not there. Our clients in the future will have a feature that says, I only want to install it when it was confirmed. So we're giving back freedom to those using our repository to say, you can decide what level of security you want for yourself. We don't tell you how to do things, we just give you the options, and you can decide. At ISE on Droid, we use a tool called RBT log. That's a reproducible build transparency log. We have the resets checked in the repository, and we have the logs also checked in as a JSON, so you can confirm that's how the build was run, that's the entire build log, and we got a file hash of A. The original was a file hash of A, so they both matched. It's a SHA-256 match, so it's reproducible. F-Droid uses F-Droid server for the builds and for the reproducible builds, but they have also a second setup. Come to it later. Both sites using only FOSS tools for that. That's important for us, for both sides of us. And at ISE on Droid, we use Podman containers with different images. We have a huge flexibility that way. We can use Debian Bullseye, Bookworm, Trixie, Ubuntu, Jummy, Noble, whatever, to match the environment as close as possible to increase the chances of reproducible builds. F-Droid uses Vagrant with Debian Bookworm for the main build server, but they have a verification system set up separately, which runs for a short while, for this last year. They started that with Podman for verification builders. So they have a second verification step to figure out which apps could be reproducible, to signal to the developers, hey, don't you want to set it up as reproducible build? It's not easy to switch between the two at F-Droid, because if it's not reproducible, it's signed by F-Droid. So if you switch to a reproducible build, everybody has to uninstall and reinstall. Except you set it up as separate track. But that is not part of my talk today. ISE on Droid runs multiple builders, including independent builders. So we run two builders ourselves. There's a third builder run by an independent party to confirm our builds as well. So, and we can plug in more. If anybody of you is interested in, just meet me up at UD202 for details. It's easy to set up a builder. We have even a tool for that sets it up in 5 minutes. Entire build system with all tools you need, whatever you want for it. Yeah, so we can have independent builders proving our builds independently once more. So the developer can say, I have signed it, he has proven it, and it was proven by that person that he has proven it right. At F-Droid, it's currently, as far as I know, only F-Droid's own build servers and builders and also verification system. The software system you could also set up. I'm not involved with the details of their build system, but it's also not part of my talk today. So we have at IssyAndroid independently verifying developer's build. We always ship the developer's build. F-Droid is independently verifying developer's builds for apps established as reproducible builds at F-Droid, and otherwise that they also check which could be established as reproducible builds, and they have their own ones which they build twice to say, well, okay, it's the same outcome, so nothing in between. I already said that we're always shipping the APK from the developers, and at F-Droid they ship the developer's APK if it's reproducible and set up as reproducible build. If it's not set up as reproducible build, they ship their own. If it is set up as reproducible but doesn't reproduce, they ship nothing, as said before. So what are the challenges with reproducible builds? I can only scratch on the surface because there are many challenges, so I want just to mention the main ones. When setting up the first reproducible builds, things can go wrong later with the next release or next to next release. We can't cover that all, but I want to mention some also independent of the build frameworks used. It's very easy to handle Java and Kotlin. Basically, you just need to match the JDK version. So in most cases, that's already sufficient to set up a reproducible build. Exceptions exist. More complex it gets when you have native libraries like with Flutter, Node.js, React, Go, Rust, you name it, Expo, whatever, because those frameworks embed the build path into the libraries. So you also need to match the build path. You need to match the CMake version. You need to match a lot of other stuff. So it gets, it's easier to set up a Java application maybe in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, depending on how long the build runs, to confirm, yes, it worked out. To set up the Flutter version, the Flutter app for the first time takes maybe 2 hours to get it right, to match that. And then you also have the problem, the developer has installed the NDK, so libraries get stripped of the symbols, but our builders don't have, so ours don't strip, so you have a different outcome. So you need to figure which version of the NDK has a developer installed on his laptop to match that. So that's getting the more complex, the more native stuff you have in. Build path embedded. Pass from Windows builds. try to match C:whatever on a Linux system. No, we don't build on Windows. We build on open source. Yeah? So no Windows. Just to throw things out maybe and for some light to come in on fresh air. There are ways sometimes to get it matched by saying we want not absolute paths, we want relative paths. Doesn't always work out, gets difficult. Different version of different build SDKs produce different output. Flutter, you say, yeah, we always use latest for reproducibility. But no, latest today is not the same like latest tomorrow. Yeah. So somebody, you build today, we build later than you. Maybe in between there was an update from Flutter. Another one wants to check if we are doing right and builds it a month later. There are two versions later already, completely different output. So you need to pin the versions even of the environments, of the Flutter exactly 28.8 whatever. Yeah, not just latest or greater than or between and doesn't work. Okay, some I mentioned already. These are links. If you download the PDF, you can follow the links. We have the first basic rule that is making up for 80% of failures, if not kept. Always build your APK from a clean tree, at the commit your release tag points to. Which order you do that, if you first build and then tag, doesn't matter, as long as they match. And clean tree means no local changes and also no remaining artifacts from previous builds, because they cause already different outcome. That makes up for 80% of the failures. Some of that our framework can autocorrect, but not all. switching between Windows and Linux. This version, this next version, the other one. We have to correct the line breaks. We can do that afterwards in our APK. We say, okay, if we play Windows and add the line breaks, it's identical again. But if that changes with each version, it means every time manual intervention to correct the build result. So that causes us headache and unneeded additional time spendings. Introducing more or less complex enforced signing. It's nice if your build setup automatically signs the APK, but we don't have your keys, and we shouldn't have your keys. We don't have your credentials, and we should never ever have your credentials. What we build is an unsigned APK. If the APK is complete, we say APK sick copy. Copy over the signing stuff from the original APK, which only works if it's otherwise identical or the signature would fail. That's how we test if it's reproducible. Can we copy over the signature and do we get the same hash? So if you introduce complex signing, the build breaks. Oh, I can't find the signing key. Key store is not present. Whatever. Building locally with different setup than specified. Your build Gradle checked in into your repository says, I use Gradle 8.14. But locally you build with Gradle 9. And doesn't match. We get different outcome. In this case, very easy. It's one file that says what Gradle version was used, so we need to patch that file afterwards, but it's extra work. You have to keep it consistent to increase the chances of easy reproducibility. Embedded build timestamps are ugly, ugly, ugly. Some frameworks do that, like Sentry loves to do that. You build at a different time as we do build, and that will always be the case. We want start synchronously and end synchronously as well. Can't work out. So an embedded build stamp definitely kills a reproducible build. Sometimes can be fixed by patching it, but a lot of extra work on the side of the reproducible builders. Using non-LTS JDKs like 22 or using 19, it's not a long time support version. That the versions in between is where they try different stuff, which gets revoked with the next one and doesn't work 100% yet and so on. So always stick with LTS versions like, I go far way back, 11, 17, 21, and 25 now. That's the LTS versions, they are marked LTS. We only use LTS versions, so if you come with a 22, it's like playing the lottery. You can be lucky, but usually you are not. So, part of that, what Android developers, app developers should do, we already had. We have this page with reproducible build hints for developers, like the basic first rule we already said, the aforementioned one, and build time related things like build timestamp, build IDs, and so on, because they are usually making it more complicated to get it reproducible. For release builds, avoid canaries, like we just talked about the LTS versions. What you use for your test builds, we don't care. But the release builds should be with a stable framework. And, yeah, basically avoid the problems I just mentioned before. And that's the basic hints we would like to give. We have a couple of related links for that. We have our reproducible builds documentation, including a long thing, what you can do if it fails, how to look for errors, where do you look first, and which order you process things, and what is fixable and what is not. We have our reproducible build framework. The R builder setup leads you to the script I said before, letting you set up a builder within 5 minutes with the items you specify. Only the builder, or also the tools for checking why it failed, or the repair tools, whatever you want. You can set it up in a config, and 5 minutes later, your builder is running. Reproducible builds all should of course get a reference, because they are the ones who collect and maintain all the things around reproducible builds. F-Droid also has a documentation for reproducible builds we want to mention here. And our clients, Droidify and Neostore, show the status of reproducible builds up at Izzy on Droid. Okay, I guess I'm in time. Ah, good. You can ask any questions you have. partly. If you include them as, what is it called? Pardon? Ah, okay. If we cover reproducible dependencies, that means if we reproduce the app itself, but the dependencies, what is about the libraries you plug in? If you have them inside as a git sub, what is it, sub, not subtree, not? Submodule, thank you. Submodule, of course, we built a submodule. If you have a setup like, okay, here's a git clone this repository and build with this step, we cover it. If you come and say, well, we have the whatever JNE library in there, no. Yeah, that depends on the setup. We try to have everything covered, but other than FDroid, which says we want to have everything covered or we don't do it, we say you really should, but we don't force you. But if it's too many of these things, we say, sorry, it's not our part. It's about open source. Everything should be open. Answered?
That's the question.
Okay. Yeah?
Could you give some ballpark numbers of about the hardware that you need for such a... Could you give some ballpark numbers about the hardware that you need for such a builder if you want your own?
We cover what?
Ballpark numbers.
Okay. No, it was a 15 euro. actually, as I said, we built with Podman containers. We can name the hardware we have. It's running on an AMD. It's hosted by one who provides all servers and everything. So it's not something you buy at MediaMarkt or something like that. It's not high-end enterprise hardware. It's medium hardware. But one of our builders runs on custom hardware from a local provider, just cobbled together, something like that. Works. No, we have plans in this direction, but not yet. Okay. But if your question is, can I set it up on my own cheap laptop? Yes, you can. Yeah. All reproducible base is based inside the containers. Yeah. So inside the images we use, the containers we fire up.
For some stuff you will still need some RAM, for example.
Yeah, it goes a bit deep inside. We have to cover CPU count and things like that, yeah. But that is a bit more extended, deeper topic. I can cover that outside, but we have just 1 minute left or so. Time's out? 1 minute, okay. So one more question.
Related timestamps, do you look for file contents in archives?
The timestamps show up in the Diffoscope. Pardon? If
the files that include timestamps, do you extract archives, for example, and compare the files that were extracted?
Okay, where we compare timestamps, if we extract them from binaries, of course they end up in the binaries, that's where the Diffoscope shows them, so we use Diffoscope to discover them, and then try to patch them, but we can't patch them in binaries directly, it's more complex to explain. Yeah, what we basically do is afterwards extract them from the APK, fix the timestamp, put it back in the APK, and check if it's then matching after you realigned everything. Can't compress it otherwise. Yeah. It's not a sophisticated, really big sophisticated with tricky stuff. It's pretty much simple. Okay, I get the signal, time's up. I thank you very much for your interest. If you have any questions, I'm available to you at UD 202. And see you at our stand.